evening in another supplemental B-side to the Pothole Like a Hole podcast in the what is rapidly becoming the Deftone season, it seems. I have on the phone my friend from the East Coast, Joey. Joey, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Excellent. Joey, I think this is the first time you and I have actually ever really spoken to each other.
Yeah, I think in an audio form at least, yeah.
Yes, we've been internet pals for over a decade, I think.
Yes,
various social networks. I think it probably started on a comic book message board somewhere back in the old days.
Later found out we actually had mutual friends that we didn't even know until years later.
Yes, it's very, very frightening and very scary how small the world really is. And was one of the mutual friends Sean Vivens?
Yep.
Okay, making sure I didn't make that up, because he's the other guy we called for this little thing.
Oh, good. I'm in good company now.
Yeah, he's not on the phone right now. This is not a This Is Your Life segment, but yeah, we recorded a little bit with him too.
Sean's a good one to talk to because he knows like everybody somehow. If you talk to him long enough, he'll have some connection to. I don't know. I was talking to him over the years, just crazy, like the people that. He's another one where I'm like, oh, you know this guy too? I'm like, it's like. It's
crazy. Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of Sacramentans are that way. He and I and the other co-host, Eric, used to work together at the record store, and they went to.
Dimple.
Community, yes, Dimple.
I have many, many things. My other friend, Tyler, who I don't know if you know, he's from Sacramento. He used to send me, like, because there'd be stuff I used to, like, know more. He's another guy who I met through an internet message board, like, early 2000s. And I knew more about his area, like, than he did, even though I'd never been there before.
That's why I call it, that's why I said Joey's the other guy I want to get in this little batch of episodes. Is I have never been able, I've been fascinated by it, really. Is it, so we had mutual interests on the internet and people on the internet, especially, I think, in the early O's to the, like in between the start of the internet and social networking getting really popular, if you found interest on a bulletin board of some sort, there's chances are you might still talk to a handful of those people today, because I think back then you were doing you actually had to seek people out you had mutual interest in, so you were actually communicating, as opposed to now everybody can be in touch on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and everything else. All these people have the ability to talk to each other, but no one's actually really talking to each other, if that makes sense.
Or they're talking past one another.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I feel like some of these ties are actually pretty strong ties that some of these, pop culture friends, for lack of a better term, you make. But with you...
Yeah, so some of my best friends I would consider, like, are people that, I met on message boards, did podcasts with, and, like, I talk more to than... people that live like within 10-20 miles of me. It's pretty crazy.
It's amazing. The internet's the best and the worst thing that ever happened to this world. But but that is what's fascinating about you is that I never understood how you're born and raised in New York, right? You're from the East Coast.
Yeah, I'm Long Island.
How
the home of Glassjaw.
The home of Glassjaw. Yeah, that's very on brand for you. Yeah, I thought
that was my one stock in trade with people from the the West Coast that I got to know.
Oh, you know.
Oh yeah, I'm like I've seen Glassjaw play in like a little fucking bar like down the street. I've seen Vision of Disorder play. Like, so I had that. That was my cachet to people on the West Coast.
Yeah, when I saw Glassjaw, I saw them twice, but the one time that sticks out was when I saw them open up on that Deftones tour.
White Pony tour, yeah, 2000.
And they gave the Deftones the key to the city at that stop in Sacramento, which I just found hilarious.
That was at one year window of time where the Deftones actually were like one of the big bands in rock music, which they've never. It's funny. I think just because of longevity at this point, they now are considered like one of the big bands in rock. But it's more of a thing with like, well, everybody's. Not everybody else is still around. There's not a lot of like new big rock bands.
Exactly. They're consistent.
Like they kind of occupy, like they might play arenas and stuff now just because like, well, they're the last guy standing, and like there's a million bands influenced by them. So like they kind of have that relationship now. I don't think they have like big hit songs necessarily. Well, is anybody, I guess, nowadays? But yeah, that 1 year, that, I guess. Glenn, you're from Sacramento.
Yes.
So I was going to ask you this too. But like, because my friend Tyler was in, you know, he was like in middle school, high school, like around the time that, like, he was getting, he got into Deftones right after that period that we just talked about. So like, he would be asking me about stuff, and like, I'd be kind of like going, oh, well, this happened. I was, you know, I wasn't, obviously, like, I was still also young myself, like, when Deftones came. You're a little older than me, I think, right?
I'm 40, so.
Yeah, okay, so you're 5 years old.
Okay, then yeah, I am.
So, like, you're probably right. So, were you, like, into Deftones, like, before they were signed and stuff, or no, you were still too young?
No, and I don't want to forget my question. I'm going to come back to it now.
Oh, but
it's okay. I can.
I used to do podcasts too, so I haven't done one in a while. So you're getting me.
No,
like,
I'm professional, and I know how to come back to what I wanted to ask you. But to answer your question, because you're the guest, that's fine. Guests get to come before the host. I was into them right around. Like, I specifically remember reading about them in the local newspaper, like your local
SACB.
Yes, and then there was a section called the ticket section. And I was as a voracious reader, I would read anything I get my hands on. I also liked movies, even back then. I just loved reading movie reviews. And that was also the section where it would talk about local music. Read about the Deftones. They seemed pretty cool. It was a perfect storm about reading about them locally. And then it was probably right before they got their record deal. So I'm into Korn at the time. The next band in line is the Deftones, who I read about in my local paper. And I didn't see them before Adrenaline came out. I don't even think I saw them for that tour. But around that time, in between Adrenaline and Around the Fur, I saw them. And I got into them when Adrenaline came out. I bought it through a Columbia House deal. But yeah, I mean, I was 14 or 15 when that record came out. Got into it when it came out, but I was not on the ground floor at the skate parks and whatnot seeing them before that. No. So.
Yeah, so... Cactus Club and stuff. You weren't seeing.
No, I wasn't. I was a little just too young. I wasn't old. I mean, I probably could have if I really wanted to, but I wasn't at the point. Like two to three years later, I probably would have saw a version of the Deftones at local clubs, but it wasn't the Deftones.
But were they? My question really is like, were they like a thing, like where? Like kind of like the community of Sac, because this is my thought in my head, you know, as a kid, is like I'd always see, because I have that, like, I still wear it to this day, like I have the Deftones Sacramento jacket, like the windbreaker, mm-hmm. And I've had that since like middle school, and I used to wear that and think of like, oh, in Sacramento it must be like Deftones paradise, you know, like everybody must be a fan. Then I kind of heard like from people like yeah, not like, it's, you know, people, it's like any other area. Like, it's like the people that are into that. I mean, I'm assuming at some point there was, you know, there is a little hometown pride associated with that. But, like, it wasn't a thing where, like, everybody, it was just, you know, was into the band. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I haven't talked to a lot of people from the first period of that.
Now, I don't think everybody was into the band. But I do think if you were into the quote-unquote music scene, you were into the Deftones. And that's why a lot of those bands still to this day have, mixed and matched players and whatnot, because they all support each other. And I think that the quote unquote again music scene in Sacramento, a lot of like the guys like me that are 40 now still were going to a handful of shows like every week if you could. And if you were doing that, you were a big Deftones fan probably. Was everyone a Deftones fan like everybody in New Jersey is assumed to be a Bruce Springsteen fan? I don't think it's the same thing. But
yeah.
I definitely think there's a lot of hometown pride there, and I think there's probably some like soccer moms and dads that were just glad they heard. Yeah, I've heard of the Deftones, and would call themselves a fan because of that. Eventually, you know, Tesla faded away at some point, and Cake only had a few hits. So,
yeah. Well, I'm assuming I'm going to lead. I think I know what question you were going to ask me initially, and that would kind of. I'm assuming you're asking about how I got into that. Scene of me, like, or the Sacramento.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I sit around. And I'm just like, how did this guy? It's kind of like when you read about. Let's see. I'm an Oakland A's fan, And every once in a while, I read about like a guy from London that loves the Oakland A's. And I'm like,
or like
the hell
Japanese
that
guy that knows all about like New Orleans jazz more than like most people. That, you know, like
exactly. Is that so? That's always it. I've been, you know, fascinated. It's probably the sad but true word for it. Is that Deftones? I can see how anybody can become a Deftones fan. You just become a fan of a band that has some radio hits. That makes sense. But you seem to have gone, and you're a fan of other Sacramento bands as well.
Yeah, one of my other favorite bands is Far, who were probably, the number two or three Sacramento band, like, probably around that time.
They're definitely in the top. Yeah, for that time, yeah, like, top.
Yeah,
sure.
And I've actually got to know, like, I kind of know Jonah, the singer, and, like, I've met Sean Lopez before. Like, they kind of all... I mean, it's a little removed from it now, but, like, I definitely was one of those guys, like, especially in the early days of the internet, I was definitely somebody, like, I think I ran, like, a Far fan site at one point. I did a tour archive for that. Like I'm that, like, nuts, where I was going back collecting Fly. Like, I'm a super Far fan. Like, I even have, I showed Jonah recently that I actually got, like, their second album that, you know, like, I don't know how familiar with Far you are. But, like, you know, they had a bunch of a lot of Sacramento bands, especially in that time, like, not, it was like most bands only had tapes. It was like a big deal if you were an indie band and made like the CD. I think I can't remember what the name of the I've heard Deftones talk about it too. Like, they their big thing was like they were not gonna actually do a CD until they got signed. So, like, if there's a whole bunch of like Deftones recordings from before Adrenaline that were all like these two song tapes. I don't know if you, but you probably know some people that had some of those.
I'm sure that if I think hard enough, something resembling like a single was floating around for some of these bands.
But like Far had released a tape in 91 called Sweater River Live No Lies. Like right when they were a band, like they put a tape out like right away. And then their first full length album was called Listening Game. It was on a CD and it was also on a tape. And I don't know, a handful of years ago, I managed to actually find a still sealed copy of the tape, and I showed it. He was like, yeah, I don't know where you find this stuff. I also found like an old Far 7-inch like on Discogs that like I grabbed like when that was an early set. Like I have, but even like earlier than that, like I became really obsessed with that scene. So like I was also a big fan of Wilhaven and Tin Fed, and 847, and I don't know, Ghost Ride. I guess it was eventually. You know Ghost Ride?
I remember the name. Tin Fed.
Ghost Ride is Wilhaven minus Grady with Ray from Tin Fed as a singer. They released
record. I thought when Wilhaven, and this has quickly become just two nerds talking about things, but I thought Wilhaven minus Grady was just Wilhaven with the guy from Red Tape for a little bit. Did I make that up?
That's also a record. But Wilhaven broke. The first time Wilhaven broke up was in 2003. So it's 2003, I think. They then started this other project called Ghost Ride because Tin Fed also broke up. And then Ray did the, and like it's a great record. You would really like. It's very like Queens of the Stone Age kind of Kiss-y kind of stuff. It's really really good. I'll get you a copy of fucking Cobra Sunrise. I have a bunch of them. I'm such a fucking psycho fan. It's like I go to used record stores and like when I see copies of things, or I'm like, I was that guy growing up, like in high school. Like, I'm like, oh, I would just have extra copies on hand of things that I knew, like, people probably wouldn't go out of their way to get. Like, you know, like you used to tell people about bands, and it's like, unless you put it in their hand, they weren't really gonna listen to it. So, like, I had Far stuff, I had all a band called Human Waste Project. I don't know if you ever heard of.
I remember that name,
I was a big fan of. A lot of other stuff, like a lot of Long Island hardcore bands and stuff. Like I used to, if I see, you know, you'd go to a used record store and see those in like the $2 bin. I'm like, these gotta go to a good home. I can't just leave these here. So I have like, I still to this day have like piles of stuff. Like for when I find it, I'm like, and I used to just hand them to people and be like, and you know, you'd always get a great response because someone's like, oh, they had to do none of the work. It's like it's in your hand. Like they'll probably listen to it. They'll probably give it more attention because like you handed it to them.
No, especially back in the days. And if you're still doing that, I love to hear that. But before everybody could be distracted by a billion things online all the time, if somebody gave something to you, you fucking listen to it. You know,
it's actually more difficult now where everyone can find it. Cause I find people don't, like, even if they're like, can go listen to it for free, they usually really don't.
No, it's a strange, like I was saying about the internet being the best and the worst thing, is that we have the, I'm not the, obviously everybody
it's
said
too,
this plenty
it's,
of times.
It's almost a gluttonous thing with people.
Exactly.
Like they have too now, many options.
Well, think about when you sit down and watch something on Netflix and you're just like, I don't know where to begin.
I don't even do that because I'm just like, I can't even, whatever. I still have Blu-rays and 4K discs and all that.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, you are a...
I have laser discs, man. I can check and show you.
You're respecting the art. You know, that copy of Evil Dead 2 needs to be treated correctly, properly.
Yes. But yeah, so yeah, that I'll try and find. I think I have a copy. I'll send it to you of Cobra Sunrise. You would love that record.
That'd be great.
But I'm trying to think of other. There definitely were more bands. I remember there was some. There was some I was like, there was some I never was a big fan of. Like Die Trying was one I know from Sacramento. That, like,
I keep trying to. I am convinced that my old roommate and friend and the other podcast co-host in this thing, Mark. I swear we live right next door to that guy, or it was another band with a similarly bad name with a bad haircut. But,
what was that hit song they had? Oxygen is gone, or something like that.
It might be. There was a that was all during the uprising of them and Simon Says and whomever else that were
bipolar. That was
on the Leisure. Another one. Just wasn't, Leisure. We're not just here to besmirch bad bands that didn't do it for us. But,
I'm not even saying bad. It's just a time and place, and that time and place is not now.
No, but I understand your passion for it. I totally get that. Like the closest thing I could think of is that. Like when you find a label or a town that seems to just have enough bands that are just cracking for you. Like, I totally get that. I was that way, still kind of am with anything related to Neurosis. Anything that was on Tribes of New Rot. Or not their crust era, but like the next step where they started their own label. And anything related to Neurosis on Tribes of New Rot. All these bands that were doing something sludgy and they all seemed to feed off of each other. There were many years where that was just like I could not get enough. I would buy weird singles and imports that I would never listen to, and I totally get that mindset. So there's something about buying weird singles that I would never listen to. I used to do that a lot. That was strange. I feel like that was you knew you loved an artist when you would spend like $22 on a two song CD that you probably might not take the plastic off of just to say you tracked it down.
I have a lot of Deftones ones with that, and radio stuff. Well, actually, again, this is another topic, but like there's a brief window where I kind of, in a roundabout way, worked for the band, not directly, but I worked for Streetwise, which is in turn run by their management, Velvet Hammer, and I got to promote the self-titled record and the B-sides and rarities record. So, and I remember that was like still, like, I remember the thing of getting like a box of like, I remember there was a promo DVD was the thing that was the promotional thing for the self-titled, and like two different kinds of stickers. I remember like, I think I was still maybe last year of high school, second to last year of high school when that record came out. Do you remember the Gorilla Tour? You went to the one, right? The one at,
I went to the Crest for the self-titled.
Yeah, that was the last show of that tour.
Yeah.
The loudest show
I've ever seen. My God, I don't know what it was about that show, but it was loud as hell.
That was Mogwai, kind of like My Bloody Valentine, like level loud.
Yes, it was. And the second loudest show I've ever been to was Mogwai and Isis. So it's all comparable. But it was
definitely. They did the show here at Webster Hall. They announced it like 2 days before. I remember like me and my clique of friends. Like I remember because the thing you could only get like two tickets at a time. So we had like three. So that was when you still had to like call Ticketmaster and shit. Like, and I remember like we had this whole system set up so like we could all get tickets. We all got in, and like that's still my favorite concert I've ever been to. And that was like, that's a period. Again, I don't know. I'd probably say White Pony's their best record, but I always have a very soft spot for that self-titled record.
As do I. Yeah,
and I know it's not like it definitely. It definitely feels like unfinished, but like the bones of it are fucking amazing. And I think it predicted so many trends in heavy music that like they never really even got to capitalize on. Like you can hear Death Heaven, like the beginning of that, mm-hmm. like all the shoegaze revival that had happened later, Chelsea Wolf, like all these artists, you can hear like the genesis of like, oh, here's where somebody like put that idea into the air. That like, oh yeah, you can incorporate this other stuff into like metal and hardcore.
Now, when you go through their entire discography, which just did again, but I for the first time I listened to it like in or like a run, like together, back to back to back to back to back. Mm-hmm. And I've with the exception of the one I always pronounce wrong, the Noi Yokan one.
Koi no Yokan.
Yeah, which I didn't even realize, and then just chalk it up to getting older and not being able to keep up. I didn't even realize that record came out until Gore came out, and I was like, oh, two new Deftones albums.
Yeah,
that's
I remember
great.
Being very disappointed with you around that time. I think I was
yeah.
the one.
Yeah, well, sounds about right, but I think I've made up for it by now. But yeah, I just the amount of ideas they would have and the consistent quality is just amazing. And I mean, you can back of that self-titled album, I think White Pony is probably their best album, probably. But from there on, and I think starting with that self-titled album with just a slight dip on Saturday Night Wrist, for whatever reason.
Saturday Night Wrist is interesting because I think it has... Well, Saturday Night Wrist is interesting because that was the first time in which I got to... I became, like, friends with people who were friends with the band, and I knew people who worked for them, so I mm-hmm. heard, like, all the inside info about the whole creation of that record. And I think the reason that that's my least favorite record might possibly be that reason. It's like, I knew too much. I knew too
yeah,
much.
Yeah, and that lines up with the, yeah, they seem pretty open, open fellows.
But I will say listening to, I still think Saturday Night Wrist is my least favorite, but it has some of the best songs they've ever written on it.
Yeah, well, least favorite Deftones album I decided is still like a B minus maybe. It's still pretty good.
Yeah, it's still a great record, but it's like, I know too much about like what it could have been. And why at times you're like, why is this here? Like, why is that? Like, what's going on? And you're like, oh, nobody gave a fuck. That's why.
It's kind of, yeah, it's kind of a strangely experimental album in some point, in a strange way.
Yeah, but like, I still, that song, like Cherry Waves and Xerxes and that stuff, I'm always like, that's some of the best stuff they've ever done.
That Xerxes song. I think, is that Kim Dracula on that one?
Yes, Kim Dracula is on that. A lot of great stuff on there, but there's a lot of like, what's going on with this? Like, there's a lot of that on there, too.
With the exception of that album, they've maintained a level of quality that I do think, like you talked about that longevity thing, people over the years just come to respect it, and that's why, even though they're not selling a billion records,
they're still a rock band that puts a new album out, and it is in the top 10 of Billboard, and a lot of that is still physical sales. That's kind of a bit like there. I remember going to the record store when Ohms came out, and like the guy told me that like, you know, everybody that came in pretty much bought the vinyl and the CD, and he's like, that doesn't, we don't really, especially if like an indie record store, you're like, that doesn't happen that much. You're like, there's still a like a fervent base that needs to own these, and I'm like, they're like, that's even among a lot of like even bigger bands, I think a lot of people can kind of take or leave. Like, I love Weezer, but I haven't listened to a new Weezer album since, I don't know, 2008. Mm-hmm. And I'm fine with that. Like, you know, like, I'll go to a Weezer show, and I don't know some of the songs, but I'm like, I'm okay with that. I could never do that. Like, I have to hear every Deft, and I'm just excited. Like, I think Ohms is a great record. Like, I still like all their, it's not, there's other bands that I would consider, like, in that favorite status, and we're like, I'm like, I can kind of take or leave like whatever the new thing they're putting out is. It's not I'm open to it being good, but like it doesn't hinge anything. We're like a Deftones thing, I need to hear that and I need to own it.
I have to say, for a while I wasn't feeling that way, but I started feeling that way again in the last couple of years, and it's
which is interesting, it's because the record that made you like interested again is one a lot of people don't like.
What, with Gore?
Yeah, Gore is the one that's like the most hated.
Yeah, maybe it's because I just wasn't heavily invested, and I came back and I had a few years to get caught up on. But I saw nothing about that record seems like a turnoff to me. I don't.
It
know.
Has a bad like a bad mix on it, but I like the songs on it a lot.
Yeah, that you can't that the Phantom Bride that raises the average quite a bit if you ask me.
That is a great. It's so, really funny too, because I would assume, just judging on your taste, that Koi would be a favorite. So it is funny, like, that's the period where you weren't really paying attention.
Well, it's not, but when I found it, I was really stoked on it. Maybe I wasn't paying attention to a lot of stuff. I got, you know, around the time, I hate to say this, it's very boring, but around the time I got married, and I didn't have a kid yet, but I living in San Francisco at that time, I actually started getting so jaded, and that's the word for it. Like, there was a good show every night. It got to the point where I didn't go to shows anymore. I was just like, waking up, clocking in at work, coming home, talking to my wife, who I love very much, and then doing it again the next day. And I feel like a lot of things, like going to shows, keeping up with new music, I just wasn't doing it for a while. I'd like to say now that I do act like an old man sometimes, but at least when it comes to metal now, I keep up with what's new, and that's fun. It's fun to keep up with new stuff. But
taking over your like lately. I've been kind of like, I don't really care about much anymore.
Yeah, well, the last year it was hard to care about anything.
But I was like, I still listen to the music I like already. Like, I have to listen to that.
So the White Pony specifically, is that one? What do you think about it makes it so special? Which is the most cliched question, but. I mean, it still is. Like, that thing, it's as good as today as it was 20 years ago, if not better.
I'll again pose a question to you as well, as I seem to keep doing. But, like, do you remember, like, kind of, like, when that record came out?
I do.
That really was, like, a rollout. Like, I had never really quite seen for, like, a band that I was... I mean, I know, I'm like, one of my other favorite bands is, like, Smashing Pumpkins. And, like, I do remember, like... Yeah, I'm sure there was a big rollout for like a Door or something. I don't quite remember it, you know, like that way.
It wasn't like, no. Yeah, but a door was more confusing for most people than that. There wasn't a huge rollout. That's a good record too. Yeah.
But I'm just meaning like, I'm sure that like there was a big deal that a record was, I just don't really remember. Like, I'm sure when Melancholy came out, there was a big rollout. I'm like, I just remember that White Pony one being really unique. Especially from a band that was coming from like where they came from, where like, you know, Maverick was never, and Warner Brothers were never giving them like that kind of attention. And like, when I knew, like, I'm like, wow, they're hiring like filmmakers to make a short film like about the movie. And like, there was promote like the billboard in Times Square. Like, I don't know what was going on in SAC. I'm assuming there's a lot of promo out there.
Oh, that one was, yeah, there's a lot of hype. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that maybe Maverick had their act together. And said, well, this band that was just a quote unquote new metal band seems to have evolved here. And we got a hit in our hands, folks. Even though it's weird, we should definitely get behind it.
That's actually the opposite of actually how Maverick felt. They were disappointed that they didn't deliver them a new metal album.
Well, yeah, if you actually, yeah, a lot of, we discussed quite a bit the fact they were forced to go write a new single.
the funny thing is, I don't know if you, I assume you guys probably did an episode on White Pony itself, probably maybe talked about this, but like, did you know, like, do you know what they originally like wanted this first single to be from, like the label?
I don't know what the first single is supposed to be, no.
Street Carp.
All right.
They were just like, they had to fight for change to get released. And it's like, it's so funny. Like, I'm just like that's their biggest song ever. Like, and it's just like, and it's the biggest hit they ever had.
Yeah,
and it's like,
it's a great song.
I just think it's funny, like, listening to that album. And then after they got, and Change was huge. And then the label comes back and says, there's nothing else we can do with this. I'm just like, I just still find that so strange. I'm like, you don't think like RX Queen could have been a hit? Or like, you know, like Digital Bath was eventually a single, but like that could have been. That should have been the follow-up. That would have been huge.
It's also very strange. Very strange song lyrically as well. Well, like that being said, then no, good point. So you have So the record label does feel the opposite, and they're like, "What's going on here? Like, we're going to make you go, rewrite one of your songs so we can release it as a single and have a video that's like a Britney Spears video," which I actually really enjoy the whole back to school thing.
I do. But, it's one of those things though that like I remember. It's one of those things that now, like, there's always, like, reaction music video channels where people are going back, like, and, like, kind of, like, and Deftones are very popular on these channels. And it's, like, every time somebody's, like, go watch Back to School, I was, like, don't do that. Like, that's not going to be, like, that's not the representation of the band I want to see. But I do kind of enjoy it. I just kind of, like, it's one of the, I really dislike that they released the record with it on as the first song. And, like, that's how a lot of people listen to it now. I guess like
it might be blasphemous, but I prefer it that way. I prefer I like it because of the
book ending.
The book ending. Yeah. There's the word I'm looking for. Yep, that's it. And I know that's not what they wanted, but well, sometimes things happen for a reason. But as far as the rollout goes and the promotion, I don't know. Maybe they had a really good street team. I don't know what it was, but
Maverick definitely gave it. But I don't think it was so much because they believed that they believed in the record. It was more like, okay, this band has been with us for like 5 years now. And like, this is their third record. There has been a build, like they have been getting steadily more popular. The kind of music that they play is more acceptable. That, like, I think that they were just like, if you've been, again, how labels at least used to kind of operate, it is kind of like, well, like there were, it was like a little reward for like sticking through. And they're like, oh, how do you guys want to roll this out? And they kind of let them, you know, kind of do. And I think they did everything right in terms of the initial rollout of that record. Cause I remember it was, like, I remember even going to the store, like, you know, they had like the, you know, the red and black covers with like the bonus track and like the regular one.
That's right.
I remember there was a CD-ROM. Like, I remember like if you bought it at like Tower Records, I think they gave you like a CD-ROM with like a screensaver on it, which is like a big deal at the time. Like,
important,
you know, like,
important stuff, man.
And that's actually where you can see the Nixed Streetcar video is on that CD-ROM. But I just remember though that was I think that was I was exiting eighth grade, about to go into high school, I think, that summer. And I remember, I think we, like the day after that record came out, it was like the school trip, you know, like if you made it through like middle school, you went to like Six Flags or whatever, like at the end of it.
Yes.
And I just remember taking that, like, I think I listened to that album over and over, and I was just very like, it was, it's funny too, cause I was thinking about this. I knew I was going to talk to you about this. And it's funny that, like, I remember the way Deftones are sometimes talked about now in terms of their progression, it's funny they were already being talked about that way in 2000. As in, like, they had been a band that had been around for a long time. But it's funny, if you really look at it, at least as a band releasing albums on a major label, they'd only been around for 5 years. And it's kind of crazy. I don't know if that's just how time moved differently than it does now. But it's like, could you think 5 years? It's like, I don't think that... I don't think we think of things quite that. Like, I don't think something could have made that big, like made that kind of stamp on a style of music or in people's consciousness in a 5 year period. But in a 5 year period, they released like three pretty like monumentally influential records. And it's like, I really thought about that recently. It's funny, like they were being talked about as this older, more mature band in like 2000.
Yeah,
that was 21 years ago.
That's like a great point. I think time. I think time moves differently now, and I think definitely the way music is released moves differently, and the way we react to artists. And it just had, at that time, yeah, they had three well-regarded albums in a row, two, and then the third one, you know, that there was some hype for it. I also think back then that there
was... It was very
was
well
a,
received, too, by, like, the music press and stuff. Like, it was definitely a... They definitely saw it as a hit record.
Yeah, and back then... The record labels would get behind albums more, even to the extent, or the extent that Maverick didn't. But it was all like album cycles were a big thing back then when a new record was coming out. Think of all the promotion that you would get if you were Korn or Limp Bizkit. They're quote unquote contemporaries at the time. And I think that it could be possible that everyone just kind of realized these guys are a little bit better than what they're being lumped in with. And they've created something here that probably gonna hang around.
If you went and looked at that year, there was three rock records that a lot of people... You saw other musicians saying this too. Like, if that year, if you went and looked at, like, you know, MTV used to do the Rolling Stone used to do those, like, ask artists, like, what was the you know, like, what rocked your world this year, some dumb title like that for the article. But it's like, I remember, like, anybody they asked, pretty much, most people had White Pony listed. And I think Scott Weiland, who was actually on White Pony, like, he said something like that, he said, like, it was At the Drive-In's Relationship of Command, White Pony and Kid A were going to save rock and roll, I believe is what he actually, that was his prediction. I don't know, we could debate if that was, but I mean... All those bands still have a ton of influence.
I was going to say, I don't know if they saved it. They had a hell of an impact, all three of them.
Definitely put it on the respirator for a little while. Like, it definitely kept it going. And I remember in the underground, like, kind of like, I remember, yeah, like Glassjaw's record was definitely like that record that year. And Cave-In's Jupiter. So it was like, it was definitely, and even in hip hop, like Outkast, Stankonia and stuff, it was definitely a time of, did Queens of Stone Age Rated R come out that year too?
No, that would have been around the time 99? The Songs for the Deaf came out. I think.
So Songs for the Deaf's 2002.
Then Queens for the Rated R probably was 99, maybe.
All right, it was definitely like
around
that
then.
Time.
All right, yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, it definitely was a period where like it was just definitely it was one of the last years I remember really where you saw like kind of experimentation and like, you know, like be rewarded a lot in the mainstream, where like there was things like even just a few years later, like I don't think something even like Kid A would have been as lauded a few years on from that period. It was definitely like before 9/11 and shit. It was definitely this like 1 year period I remember where like I think Eminem's Marshall Mathers LP, I think, was that year too. Like it was definitely just a time of like it seemed like all genres were kind of like firing on all cylinders. Yeah, again, there was a whole lot of crap out there too. I'm not saying there wasn't, but like the highs were definitely fucking high that year.
I wholeheartedly agree. There's something about the turn of the century where a lot of records, it's not just nostalgia. A lot of that stuff was top shelf. I don't know what it was, but shit, was Source Tags and Codes then too? Or is that?
That was 2001, I think.
Okay, close enough. But yeah, it's
promoted that record as well.
A lot of rock and roll saving going on with all these bands. So we got it. We got 10 minutes left for the producer who's going to kick me out of here.
Oh, okay. But sorry. My apologies for rambling.
No, this is perfect. This is what I wanted. This is I finding someone that actually is as passionate, if not more, than most people I know about this band. And then also, you know, what I don't want is if you sit down and listen to the rest of the podcasts that we do for the Deftones. I don't want to get any text messages about how wrong we are about getting any facts wrong or something. Listen, we all can't be on as point as you probably are.
I remember getting corrected on the Deftones Wikipedia for like the history of Saturday Night Wrist and being so mad because I'm like, I actually know what happened. Like, and I didn't realize like, oh, you needed to like have a source. I was like, oh, I'm just telling you what like people told me. But I still know that's the truth. I know more of the official history than most do.
If anybody wants the inside dirt on Saturday Night Wrist, they can check with you personally. Police Jade questions that we need to also get done before we go here is just what's your favorite Deftones album?
I think I said it earlier. It was
a White Pony.
White Pony's the best, but I think self-titled is still my favorite.
You did say that. Now I wanted to, so that one, yeah, I just wanted to make sure that anyone that's listening understands.
Although Diamond Eyes is up there too. Like, that's definitely standing the test of time as well, but I think I'll still stick to my original answer.
And that I'm telling you, that self-titled album, I feel like it almost is kind of, they're not a double record, but I just, there's something about it. If I listen to it and White Pony back to back, they go really well together. I think they go down, they kind of go to some of the same places in my mind, even though White Pony has much more like electronic experimentation going on, is much more subtle. White Pony sounds like a record that was created at night to be listened to at night. The Deftones self-titled album is loud as hell and kind of has a lot of color to it. But something about
always,
those two records,
I always
to me,
place self-titled as, like, in Deftones discography, I view it as their Great Southern Trendkill. It's the, it's like that record where, like, major label money was funding, like, very destructive people making very destructive decisions.
Perfect
like, you're like, yeah, I don't know. I don't think anyone was really looking at what was going on here, but it seems like these guys were, like, ready to, like, kill themselves. Like, this is just on record here.
Yeah. I'd like to see the receipts on where the money for Great Southern Trendkill went, which I do. I'm a fan of all the Pantera albums. Except
that's my
for
favorite
the,
one, though, just for that reason.
Yeah, but like, I feel like they all sound pretty damn similar to me, so I don't know what.
Yeah, same producer as well. I didn't even mean to put that together. But yeah.
Oh, you're right. Yep, Terry Date. All right, so then the other question I have for you is that I after listening to them all on the run, if I were to tell you, are you familiar with the Chino bird call? Would that make any sense to you, or would I sound like a crazy person?
The raptor thing, or the new?
Yeah,
one?
like the he does like a kind of like a Ric Flair thing on like at least once an album. I think I've noticed it.
Yeah, it's from Saturday Night Wrist on.
Okay, I'd say it probably might even be on the self-titled album somewhere, but
possibly. But he still was going for that like guttural thing then. Okay. That's actually what like fucked his voice up even more.
All right, so you're familiar. Yeah, it's like a woo, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Once you hear it, you can't unhear it. It's there. That's I love it.
I so think that's it. He had to like modify the way he like screamed and like it, so like he goes for that a lot more than doing the like old. Although he does it sometimes. Like he did it on if you ever seen when he was with Dillinger on that Revolver thing where they covered Depeche Mode behind the wheel.
I've never seen that. That's awesome. Right up my alley.
An amazing performance.
I'd love to see that.
And he does the fucking like full on like kind of like no, you know, it's pretty good. That's which definitely song. Again, as another musician that I know you're just as fond of as I am, it's very reminiscent of what Mike Patton mm-hmm. used to do. He kind of like, I mean, if you were to trace, I guess also HR from Bad Brains used to kind of do it too. But he definitely does a more like, it's definitely more like demonic sounding, I think, than either of them have done. Like, I think it definitely takes a more like a darker turn when he does it.
Speaking of Mike Patton, and speaking of being off topic, I actually liked that that Mr. Bungle remade the demo thing way more than I thought I was going to. That Raging Wrath of the Easter Bunny. Did you check that out?
Didn't make a huge impression on me. I only listened to it the one time, but
maybe I wasn't expecting much.
Have you heard the original one?
I have not. No.
Oh, that's probably maybe why, because I've had a copy of that for like a long time. So like I knew what it was already. Whereas like most people I knew were like, oh, this is new stuff. I'm like, that's actually like an old thing.
Yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that like I think over the last year, probably all of us got into something while we were in various stages of quarantine or something, and I really got back into thrash metal for some reason. And when they were released that, I was like, oh, this is great. I've never heard this before. And it sounded like it's a good thrash album. I dug it.
I'll write it down. I have now to make a copy of this too.
Look forward to it. All right. Well, I appreciate you working with our time zones here.
And, yeah, no problem. Anytime you need me for any of these, you know, I'm a fan of a lot of different kinds of music.
I know. So. You're going to go in the stable. So there'll be a couple that come up, especially when we might chat again when we get to the Faith No More episode. Who knows when that'll be? But I'm...
There you are. Another pod is in the hole. Thank you for joining us for our continued Deftones extravaganza. In the first episode, we discussed the history of the Deftones and went through a brief overview of their albums. In the second episode, we talked to Sean Bivens, a Sacramento musician who's been around such bands as Death Valley High, 847, and Willhaven, among many others. Today, we talked to Joey, a born and raised East Coaster who somehow decided to become a huge fan of Sacramento music. I am still confused as to how that happened, and we just talked about it. But he's quite a character, and a good time was had by all. And in the next episode, we will discuss the White Pony, track by track, what you've all been waiting for. So join us then. In the meantime, please remain closer to Pod.
We consider